How strong is your work team? In order to enhance teamwork, you need good leadership, individual member intuition, and a mutual desire for growth. Welcome to Leading with Social Emotional Intelligence, Building Trust Through Intentionality and Vulnerability, with your host, Glenn Harris. We'll explore the five key behaviors of a cohesive team and learn how to apply them to your own work group to create a powerful business. Now, here is Glenn Harris.
Good day, everyone. I'd like to personally welcome all of our listeners tuning in around the world this afternoon or this evening or in the morning, wherever you reside. I'm your host, Glenn Harris, and I would first like to express my sincere gratitude to our program listeners. By the end of our second show in late October, we had listeners tuning in from 13 different countries around the world. People from Central America, New Zealand, Australia, Indonesia, Philippines, Vietnam, Greece, India, France, Sweden, Canada, the United Kingdom. We're all tuning in to listen to what we had to offer. And lest we not forget the United States, where our program is listened to in all 50 states. I cannot thank each of you enough for taking the time to invest in improving the quality of your professional and personal lives through our program content. Each of you has a place in our company's family that is committed to supporting you and your team's professional excellence, no matter where you reside on this beautiful planet of ours. Our topic today is titled Daring to be Vulnerable, Achieving Success Through 360-Degree Feedback. And I'm going to dive right into this, and I'm going to start this by reading an article written by David W. Gill in Ethics. David was the co-founder of IBTE and author of Benchmark Ethics. After several years of speaking, writing, and teaching, he joined the Gordon Conwell Theological Center in 2010 and is the director of the Mockler Center for Faith and Ethics in the Workplace. Before I jump into that article, I'd like to ask you, our listeners, two very important questions. I'd like you to think about these while I'm sharing the story. First question, what is more important to you personally? Adding value to the lives of others or improving the bottom line in your return on investment? When all is done in this life, what do you want to be remembered for? Now, implicit in my question is the assumption that two goals are not at odds with each other. In fact, they are often directly connected. Yet most of us initially see these goals of adding value to others and increasing our bottom line as leading us in very different directions. So the second question I want to ask you is, what do Bill Gates, Aaron Feuerstein, and Randy Kopaha have in common? Some of these names should ring a bell with you, some more easily than others in the United States, others more recognizably around the world. Okay, here we go. David Gill writes in an article written for Ethics. This was done in June 25th on 2011. It's the story of Aaron Feuerstein. Now, that story is now old news, but it was so spectacular, he states, in the late 1990s that it quickly made it into dozens of business ethics textbooks and anthologies. The short version, Malden Mills, a textile company, best known for PolarTech, you may remember that great creative insulator product in Lawrence, Massachusetts, was destroyed by a terrible fire in 1995. Owner and CEO Aaron Feuerstein decided to continue paying the salaries of all of his workforce until he could refinish building the factory. He rebuilt the factory as a more pleasant, sunny, healthy workplace at considerable extra cost to himself and the company. Now, David states that since he recently removed to Boston area, he decided to drive out to Lawrence and have a look for himself, and the sign now just says PolarTech on it. But he had a chance to speak with Maria, who is a 19-year-old veteran hired by Malden Mills in 1993. She told him that she did get to know Aaron Feuerstein personally. Everyone at the plant knew him. He managed in a very caring, personal way, wandering around the factory and greeting his workers. And she was not surprised when he decided to cast his workers off under their unemployment insurance and personal resources when the fire happened a couple years ago. Instead of casting his workers out, he decided to keep them. Feuerstein could have cashed in on the fire insurance payment and retired probably in luxury to Florida. He could have moved his business to a cheaper labor market outside the United States, as most textile companies had done. No one would have blamed him for taking either of those options. But Feuerstein said it just wouldn't be right not to care for the men and women who had been his loyal workers. He had no doubt that he was doing the right thing, even if it wasn't the thing that most financial advisors would urge. In the immediate aftermath of the reopening of Malden Mills, product sales and employee productivity soared by 40%. But the company carried substantial increased debt because of the high cost of rebuilding a state-of-the-art facility. And then you have the volatility of the textile industry hurt the company. Three warmer than unusual winters in the late 90s depressed sales, you know, of cold weather fabric garments. And the result was that Malden Mills declared bankruptcy in November 2001. And Feuerstein was replaced as the CEO. The reorganized company declared bankruptcy again in 2007 and was sold to a group that now operates the company under the name Polartec. Now, did Feuerstein's ethical idealism cause Malden Mills business failure? It's a very important question. And it is very tempting to turn Feuerstein into an Olympian hero in the aftermath of the 1995 fire and factory rebuild. I mean, here was a true mensch among business leaders, a CEO who cared about his people, not just his net worth or what's in it for me and his personal interest. And it seemed that enhanced sales and productivity were the reward for this ethical virtue. More recently, it has been tempting to blame his ethical idealism for blinding him to the harsh business realities. His high ideals really have no place in the hard practical realism of business competition, some say. But neither of these interpretations of the Malden Mills story is satisfying or convincing. First of all, remember that this was Aaron Feuerstein's private company. He was not the agent of a set of shareholders. He had every right to do what he wanted for his very own reasons. Now, I'm sure that if we asked him today, he would still believe he did the right thing, the only thing. It satisfied him and his goals and values, and it was a success. Then, too, Maria and hundreds of other workers at the Lawrence factory still have their jobs, and customers are still happily buying Polartec products today. The business shrunk from its peak, but it still exists. It is not based in China or completely closed down, as it might have been. And for over 100 years, Malden Mills and other textile businesses have undergone wild swings in the marketplace. Malden Mills had even been bankrupt once before in 1981. As David states, it looks like success to me. To the market fundamentalists who argue that no company should ever pay a penny above the going rate for labor off the street, David suggests that companies such as Southwest Airlines, Costco, and In-N-Out Burger, they tell a much different story. With their high wages, progressive management policies, and industry-leading employee retention, satisfaction, and productivity rates. The increased effort and productivity by Feuerstein's employees after the plant reopened is evidence of a successful wage and an employee care strategy. But markets are often volatile, rarely predictable. And for a business to have enduring success, it needs more than a happy, loyal workforce and good ethics. It needs a product that's desired by customers and available at affordable prices. Buggy whips made by happy employees for ethical bosses will not save a business when buggies disappear. Snow shovels made by happy employees for ethical bosses will not make for a sustainable business if global warming ends our winter snows. This is what drove Malden Mills bankrupt. Not its ethics or employee care, but shifts in market conditions, competitive pricing, and the likes. So, good ethics is a sense success factor, but it is not a guarantee. Carrying big debt at Malden Mills was significantly related to Feuerstein's choice to invest so heavily in his employees and his rebuilt facilities, and this made the company more vulnerable. Part of Southwest Airlines and In-N-Out Burger's success is related to their performance to keep big cash reserves and avoid debt, though this does not stop them from industry-leading wages today. But the radical reduction of textile prices because of international labor markets makes any survival of American textile manufacturing something of a miracle today. This market situation, not his kind heart, is what ended Fairstein's run as a textile industry leader. Now, if we do have a quality product or service for which there is a decent market, and then good ethics and good treatment of employees is without a doubt a value added to the business that will contribute to the bottom line, well-treated employees show up happier and more dedicated to a company's success. They steal less, they work harder. Customers who receive what is promised to them and who are treated with respect will return more frequently for more business and recommend more friends to patronize the business. Anyone who needs a study to prove these common sense observations about the impact of good ethics on good business is, as we should say, needs something more than common sense to really take a look at it. David Gill, in his 2011 article here, really cites the truth in what can be said as reaching out and caring for your employees, having empathy for them, and having an awareness of how your actions as a business leader affect others and in their lives. And I'd like to give special thanks to Ethics. They're an online publication of the Center for Integrity and Business in the School of Business Economics at Seattle Pacific University for publishing David's article. Okay, now, back to the question, the second question. What do Bill Gates, Aaron Feirstein, and Randy Kapoha have in common? Okay. Bill Gates, growing up in Seattle and around Lake Washington in the 70s, I personally had the pleasure of reading about and watching the amazing growth of Microsoft corporations. The buildings seemed to endlessly pop up next to I-405 north of Bellevue, Washington. Now, while Bill Gates' name is still synonymous for many of us with Microsoft, today Bill and Melinda Gates' lives are centered around the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. This philanthropic foundation focuses on tackling critical issues and problems in four areas: helping the world's poorest people lift themselves out of hunger and poverty, harness advances in science and technology to save lives in developing countries, improve U.S. high school and post-secondary education, and build strategic relationships that will promote, advance their global network. Now, my point in briefly sharing this is that Bill Gates and his professional focus today differs from his goal when creating Microsoft. Bill and Melinda Gates focus their energy and finances on adding value to our global community by helping the most needy and vulnerable. Now, I'm going to start here with a short story, and then we're going to end because we're going to go to break, and we'll come back and talk about this story. Last month, I had coffee at a Starbucks with a Hawaiian businessman that, for the sake of his desired anonymity, will be called Randy Kapoho. We talked briefly about his life and how his business, I mean, he owns a chain of stores in Hawaii, how his business is doing. As a previous private business owner, we shared stories about our employees and issues affecting businesses today. When his face suddenly turned red and tears began to flow, I asked him in the middle of Starbucks in a conversation over coffee, I asked him, "Wow, what is that about?" And he shared that he cared and feared for his employees. I asked him to explain what he meant by that, and he shared with me that his employees in the town of Pahoa stand to lose their homes and their place of work. For those of you who don't know, the Hawaiian town of Pahoa is in the direct path of the recent volcanic eruption from the Kilauea volcano, and the lava flow is only about 400 yards from the town today and the highway. So he talked about how it was his responsibility at the stores, as the store's owner, to take care of them. I'm going to stop there. We're going to come back with that conversation, pick it up in a moment. This is Leading with Social Emotional Intelligence, Building Trust Through Intentionality and Vulnerability. This is your host, Glenn Harris.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business. Are you ready to have the biggest impact on people's lives that you may ever have? Are you ready to tap the most powerful competitive advantage in the business world? As a leader of a cohesive team, you change the way people feel. You affect their self-esteem, and this will carry over throughout their entire lives. This is the single most powerful impact that you will ever have on your company and the lives of your coworkers. What are you waiting for? Let's create a truly cohesive team together and unlock the most powerful, untapped competitive advantage available. Pacific Executive and Education Leadership Associates has an exclusive offer only available to our listeners. Call us at 808-313-1504 within 48 hours of today's live show. Mention the topic of today's show and receive a 20% discount on our outstanding leadership services for the next 3 months. Our products and trainings are current and supported by successful organizations worldwide. Whether you are a leading executive, an HR director, or a team leader, give us a call and let's talk about what we can do to support you. 808-313-1504. Where is the best place to put your money? Rick Saylor with co-host Eric Hamburg will take the mystery out of investing in order to keep your hard-earned wealth performing and protecting to its maximum potential. Listen for Straight Talk, Clear Decisions, live every Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Rick Saylor, smooth financial sailing for the best part of your life.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
You are tuned in to Leading with Social Emotional Intelligence, Building Trust Through Intentionality and Vulnerability. To reach Glenn Harris or his guest this week, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to gharris@pacificleadershipassociates.com. Now, back to Leading with Social Emotional Intelligence.
Welcome back to Leading with Social Emotional Intelligence, Building Trust Through Intentionality and Vulnerability. This is your host, Glenn Harris. On today's show, if you are someone who wants to increase your peak performance and market value, then I suggest you continue listening because this show is perfectly designed for you. You might ask yourself the question, what does vulnerability and feedback have to do with leadership success? And in, later in this session, we will explore the many benefits of vulnerability and how to model and implement 360-degree feedback to increase your peak performance and your market value. Now, I was last talking about and sharing a little story about a local Hawaiian businessman that he and I were having coffee in Starbucks. And in the middle of this conversation, you know, about sharing about issues about business and commonalities about employees and employee behaviors and things like that, Randy just burst into tears. Here it is, this private conversation in the middle of this busy crowd of people in Starbucks, all ordering, kids there, a lot of noise around. And he couldn't contain himself. And I looked at him and I just had to ask him. I said, so, Randy, what is this about for you? And he just looked at me with his eyes and his face was reddened. He was obviously very upset. And he explained to me that his employees in the town of Pahoa stand to lose their homes and their place of work. And again, for those of you just tuning in and who don't know, the Hawaiian town of Pahoa on the Big Island of Hawaii is in the direct path of the recent volcanic eruption from Kilauea volcano. So the lava flow is only about 400 yards away from the town today. People in the town are receiving updates daily. And, of course, if evacuation is necessary, it will. It has already burned one residence and is once it crosses the highway into the town, threatens a lot of things. So we don't know, of course, what that lava eruption and the flow is definitely going to do or when it will necessarily end. But a lot of people, their lives, their history to the land, their family histories are bound to change. So here's an owner of a Hawaiian chain of businesses. And one of his stores, not only the store itself is threatened, but he's not expressing his concern about that. He's expressing his concern about his employees. And he talked to me about how it was his responsibility as being the store's owner to take care of them. If he had to close his store, it was his job to find them work in his other stores. I asked him, you know, like coming from a background of mainland business where we own some small businesses, well, I just said, well, won't they be able to find work elsewhere? These are generally lower wage employees, you know, they're retail employees selling things. So their living is probably $9, $15, $20 an hour, depending on the level that they work there. And he replied to me and he said, their retail work, Glenn, in my store is their life. He said, unlike the mainland where people move from one maybe low-paying retail job to the next, in Hawaii, we have little. So we take care of our families, and my employees are my family. It is my obligation, Glenn, to ensure they continue to work and can support their families. He shared it. He says, you know, my youngest employees in terms of their time being at his places of work were on the mainland. They may be 3 months, 6 months. It was 6 and 12 years that people have been with him. That's the shortest time period. And people were waiting to become more senior and maybe have a store manager or assistant manager position. And if they knew that was 3 or 4 years off, they were there for their life. That was what it meant to them. So I was amazed at this level of investment towards his people. So what do Aaron Feinstein, Bill Gates, and Randy Capojo have in common? Each were or are business leaders. Aaron Feinstein passed away a few years ago, and his wife did in 2013. But you have business samples here of examples of a business leader in a large corporation, Bill Gates, a small, medium corporation, Aaron Feinstein, and Randy Capojo, medium, small size, private business. And they all have these three things in common, actually four things. One, the type of commitment and willingness to be openly vulnerable to support their communities beyond immediate benefits to themselves. Then they were able to let go of what I call the WeFM channel or the What's in it for me channel. They let it go years ago in their lives. It's no longer about what do I get out of it. For them, it's about taking care of their communities. Two, each of these individuals demonstrates a high degree of civic and community awareness. So as to the impacts that their decisions have on the lives of others. How many of us in business today, when we go to work and we make a decision to act in a certain manner, do we ask ourselves, how is this going to affect the people down the hall in their lives at the workplace? How is this going to affect my client and customers? How many of us ask ourselves that question on a daily basis? Three, each of these individuals sought or continually seeks to use the measure of value that they can add to others as a major criteria in their decisions for investing their time and resources. Think about that for a minute. One of their criteria certainly is return on investment. Another one of their major criterias, out of many, is the measure of the value they can add to others in their decision-making process. How many of us as CEOs, corporate leaders, managers, ask ourselves that question and use it as a criteria for decision-making? Number four, does their high level of social, economic, and intelligence play a significant role in how they treat others and form dynamic professional relationships? You bet it does. is a leader's willingness to seek the feedback of others directly related to their developmental level of social-emotional intelligence and their success? That answer is most definitely yes. We don't need a lot of research to show us that. So, should professional leaders be using 360-degree feedback as a way to increase their awareness of others and the impacts they have on others? Most certainly, yes, they should. Does 360-degree feedback improve, model, and build trust from others? The answer is overwhelmingly yes, providing that it is done right, properly, and with the intention that it is designed for. Okay. Now I'm going to share with you a short personal story again, and then we're going to head to break and we're going to come back and really go into 360 degree feedback. And I know for several of you out there listening, you may be saying, well, you know, 350 degree feedback has been around for a while. I've experienced, I know, and I'm going to ask you to hang in there with us and challenge yourself to listen to the descriptions of healthy 360-degree feedback, its intended purpose, and how our company uses that to increase value for our clients, okay? So here's my personal story. During one of my stints as a CEO of an organization just a couple decades ago in the U.S., my board decided it was going to evaluate me using this new tool called 360-degree feedback that one member had heard about. And remember, this is about the time that 360-degree feedback, the buzz, the word and terms, just have started to become popular. Now, their version, my board's version, was for individual board members to interview who they saw out in the organization and then summarize this information into a verbatim, kind of like a record of what others had shared anonymously. Now, while the reports from the individual board members varied from supportive to non-supportive and beneficial information to non-beneficial information, depending upon who they talked to and their own political slant on things, the entire design, implementation, and use of their own model was completely inappropriate in many ways. That experience led me, as a CEO, to ensure that our company will only use 360 feedback with clients and for organizations in the intent it was designed to be used, and will utilize only statistically reliable and validated instruments. We utilize the Institute for Social Emotional Intelligence 360 degree feedback assessment, which is one of the most reliable and valid on the market today. And we also utilize 363 DISC Work of Leaders through the Wiley Corporation. And both instruments accurately measure what they intend to measure. Now, before we go to break, let me kind of share with you what 360-degree feedback truly is aimed at doing. It is a system. It is a process in which employees receive confidential, anonymous feedback from the people who work around them. Now, this typically includes the employee's manager, peers, and direct reports, the subordinates below them. A mixture, sometimes between 8 to 15 people, fill out an anonymous online feedback form that asks questions covering a broad range of workplace competencies. The feedback forms include questions that are measured on a rating scale and also ask raters to provide written comments should they decide to do so. The person receiving the feedback also fills out a self-rating that includes the same survey questions that others receive in their forms. Managers and leaders within organizations use 360 feedback surveys to get a better understanding as to their strengths and weaknesses. What's important here, and I'll say this again after we go on break, we use them to get a better understanding of our strengths and weaknesses. The feedback is for ourselves, for self-improvement. It is not intended for evaluation purposes. And so many organizations will go in, they'll conduct lengthy interviews of people that derive fatigue, have inherent biases with it due to the nature of the interview, and they do not effectively measure what we are statistically looking for. And therefore, it's very important that we all understand that the real purpose of 360-degree feedback is for improvement, self-growth, professionally within the role you play within an organization. And that is critical. So with that, I'm going to talk with you just a hair about what a 360-degree sounds like. I've had too many cups of coffee this morning. Survey measures. And what a 360-degree feedback survey does not assess. Okay? So it does not assess. It is not a way to measure employee performance. It is not a way to determine whether an employee is meeting basic job requirements. It is not focused on basic technical or job-specific skills. And it should not be used to measure strictly objective things such as attendance, sales quotas, and other things. With that, we're going to take a short break. We'll come back to Leading with Social-Emotional Intelligence after the break and talk more with 360-degree feedback. This is your host, Glenn Harris.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Are you ready to have the biggest impact on people's lives that you may ever have? Are you ready to tap the most powerful competitive advantage in the business world? As a leader of a cohesive team, you change the way people feel. You affect their self-esteem, and this will carry over throughout their entire lives. This is the single most powerful impact that you will ever have on your company and the lives of your coworkers. What are you waiting for? Let's create a truly cohesive team together and unlock the most powerful, untapped competitive advantage available. Pacific Executive and Education Leadership Associates has an exclusive offer only available to our listeners. Call us at 808-313-1504 within 48 hours of today's live show. Mention the topic of today's show and receive a 20% discount on our outstanding leadership services for the next 3 months. Our products and trainings are current and supported by successful organizations worldwide. Whether you are a leading executive, an HR director, or a team leader, give us a call and let's talk about what we can do to support you. 808-313-1504.
Bob Pritchard has over 30 years of experience as a straight-talking business consultant and author, working with some of the top Fortune 500 companies. Now he's come to the Voice America Business Channel to help you and your business. Tune in to the Bob Pritchard Radio Show for information about starting and successfully running a profitable business. From the movers and shakers to great marketing screw-ups, you can't afford to miss a single edition of the Bob Pritchard Radio Show. Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern on Voice America Business.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
You are tuned in to Leading with Social-Emotional Intelligence, Building Trust Through Intentionality and Vulnerability. To reach Glenn Harris or his guest this week, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to gharris@pacificleadershipassociates.com. Now, back to Leading with Social Emotional Intelligence.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Leading with Social-Emotional Intelligence, Building Trust Through Intentionality and Vulnerability. This is your host, Glenn Harris. Now, when we last left off, we were talking about what 360-degree feedback surveys do not assess. So now let's go the opposite direction and say, well, what does a 360-degree feedback survey measure? So one, they measure behaviors and competencies. And that's very important. They measure behaviors and competencies. Number two, they provide feedback on how others perceive an employee. If I'm having a 360-degree assessment done on my my professional role in a company and my performance. It is going to give me feedback on how other employees, supervisors, and peers see me, their perceptions of me. And that is so important because oftentimes we walk around in life with these blinders and we see life only from a narrow viewpoint, our own. And so those of us who really do not have a good, healthy sense of how others perceive us, a sense of what's going on in the room, a sense of being tuned in with people, their emotions, what motivates them in the workplace, we have a hard time getting out of those blinders. And so 360-degree feedback can be such an important and valuable tool for my professional growth if it's done properly. It addresses such skills as listening, planning, and goal setting. And it focuses on subjective areas such as teamwork, character, and leadership effectiveness. Again, the survey measures behaviors and competencies in specific skill areas like listening, planning, and goal setting. Now, these are powerful areas, and when we use, like I mentioned before, break, our company uses two different instruments depending upon the nature of the client and what the client is focusing on. So if we're working with a client, a team, or a corporation on social-emotional intelligence training and coaching, we're going to use the instrument provided by Dr. Laura Belston in the Institute for Social Emotional Intelligence out of Denver, because that is a very highly reliable and validated instrument to be used in the workplace. If we're focusing on DIS and communication and behavioral styles in the workplace, we're going to use 363 DISC Work of Leaders by Wiley Corporation. Again, both of those instruments are targeted to measure specific skill sets and behavioral tendencies. Both instruments are incredibly accurate and measure what they intend to measure. So I want you to note, though, here are some reasons that are cited by Eric Jackson. He's a contributor to Forbes magazine. And in an article about why 360-degree feedback programs fail, he cites some very common sense and very specific things. One, the boss doesn't get involved or discounts the program's importance. So you have a leader of the organization who has no investment and shows that, displays that in his or her behaviors actively. So you get programs that get driven by HR, or without much attention from the boss, they're not really effective. So again, you have no thorough investment in the organization. That's got to happen, and that's got to happen through most things that organizations pursue. So secondly, the 360 tool questions are vague. So again, sometimes companies will come in and they'll do interviews. The questions will be composed in a vague manner. Maybe the assessment, the survey is composed in a vague manner. So you don't measure, you end up not measuring specific skill sets that need to be measured in relation to an employee's job that are needed. So again, sometimes they can be too vague. Also, people offer comments that are personal in nature rather than constructive. And that happened in my own 360 feedback by a group of people who really had no experience in what they were doing. Some people have had bad experience of this, and I'm one of those. These are usually what gets depicted in Dilbert, the comic strip, and they usually turn people off onto any type of process going forward. There's shame attached to it. You've got to ensure that everyone understands the purpose of the exercise is to be constructive. It's not personal. It's not your time as a coworker or a supervisor to privately vent about your feelings about this person. And so the fourth reason, no plan is set following the feedback. Here's the feedback. We're going to go over it with you, share it with you, and we're going to turn you loose. Make good use of it, and I hope you can improve what you're doing. When that happens, if there's no plan, there's no change in behavior. And the reason we're doing that, I'm doing it and soliciting it, is I'm wanting it, or it's our company's policy and program that we do it, is to facilitate behavioral change. in behaviors that are conducive to the health of the organization. So, and if there is a follow-up post-360 plan, oftentimes in most companies, it only happens once. If companies do not follow up on the 360 results, if they do, it's usually only once. However, behavioral change is hard, and it takes several reminders, not only just reminders, but you've got to replace. You've got to replace unhealthy behaviors that we've learned for many years in our lives, that we've become professionals at those behaviors. And those, some of those behaviors don't serve us well anymore. And in order to learn new behaviors, we have to practice those with a new set of tools. And we have to have the support on a weekly basis to really practice those, to so where we can do those behaviors with automaticity. And instead of grabbing the old behaviors when we come into a situation to want to use them, we grab the new healthy behaviors because we now have them with automaticity in our toolkit. And I'll talk more about that in relation to coaching and what we do and the rationale and support that coaching to use in the professional workplace. The sixth reason that sometimes 360 feedback can fail that Forbes cites is a lack of confidentiality. People who have never gone through C360 process before are usually initially very fearful and worried about how the data will be used and if it will remain confidential. You might remember a couple shows ago, we had a superintendent of Auburn Union School District, Laura Grassman, on board, and she was a client of ours. She talked about 360-degree feedback that she went through. She talked about initially how fearful she was. She didn't know about the experience. She wasn't sure what it's going to be like. She was fearful, was that going to be shared? If so, with who? And when she learned about the process before we started it, understood about it, saw that it was the same types of measurements that she had used to assess herself, and that she had decisions involved in who is going to be her subordinates, that she's going to solicit that information from, who are her peers and the supervisors, and she had some choices in that, so it had a well-rounded average assessment for her, her fear level started to go down. And it became a healthy thing for her. So, again, confidentiality is incredibly important. And you need to ensure that people up front that it is a confidential process and won't come back to haunt them at any type of performance or review time. So when we go in and we do 360 feedback, the supervisors don't get to see it. It is only the client or the clients that we work with and the coach. It's everything else is private. It doesn't get shared at all. So it may be that the client chooses to share some of that with someone they report to at their own freedom or time, or maybe a CEO chooses to share that with a board because they want to share the things they're working on in their own growth, and they're doing that for vulnerability. They're doing that to build trust with them. That is totally up to them. We do not necessarily encourage that, and we certainly will not share that information with anyone else in an organization. And the last piece is sometimes we forget the strengths that the assessments provide and share with us, and we tend to focus on the weaknesses. Some companies totally disregard the strengths that get uncovered in the 360 process. The attitude then seems to be, well, we've got to locate your weaknesses and obliterate them. And type A execs feed on this and usually want to zero in on their weaknesses and also tend to forget about their great strengths. Eric Jackson does a great job of pointing that out in his article. And the reality is that your strengths, as I'm quoting him, are what got you to where you are in your career. So let's work on your weaknesses, that's true, but let's not stop relying on your strengths. That is so important. So when we implement 360-degree feedback on behalf of our clients, we ensure the following things. One, we begin by measuring the right skills. We're relying on empirical research to determine the competencies that really make a difference to the company. Two, we take the time to properly explain both to participants and to the people giving the feedback about the exercise, the reasons for the exercise, and how the data will be used for personal professional development. Three, we make certain that there will be no breaches of confidentiality in the process. Four, our instruments, the 360-degree DISC Work of Leaders or ISEI's Social-Emotional Intelligence Instrument, are electronic and are easily completed within 15 to 30 minutes, eliminating fatigue. Our process primary focus is on discovering the strengths and carefully scaffolding experience to strengthen areas the individuals desire to work on. The results are specific to the individual. The report, presentation, and discussion of our results are conducted in a manner that enables the client to digest them constructively in a narrative and graphical format. Ease of understanding is important. 8, our discussions focus on moving the individual into the top 10% performance, elevating the individual and professional aspirations. 9, additional coaching that we use is designed to assist the client in moving forward, eliminating that idea of here it is, and now where do you go with it? And we want our clients to be carefully scaffolded and trained to reach their next level of performance success. 10, the feedback is easily presented as an aggregate average to ensure accuracy in relation to metrics so individuals can see how they compare to how they see themselves and how their behaviors and beliefs affect the professional lives of others and their team. With that said, we're going to go to commercial break. I'd like to thank you for tuning in with us this afternoon. I'd like to stay with us after commercial. We'll be back in about 2 minutes. This is Leading with Social Emotional Intelligence, Building Trust Through Intentionality and Vulnerability.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Are you ready to have the biggest impact on people's lives that you may ever have? Are you ready to tap the most powerful competitive advantage in the business world? As a leader of a cohesive team, you change the way people feel. You affect their self-esteem, and this will carry over throughout their entire lives. This is the single most powerful impact that you will ever have on your company and the lives of your coworkers. What are you waiting for? Let's create a truly cohesive team together and unlock the most powerful untapped competitive advantage available. Pacific Executive and Education Leadership Associates has an exclusive offer only available to our listeners. Call us at 808-313-1504 within 48 hours of today's live show. Mention the topic of today's show and receive a 20% discount on our outstanding leadership services for the next 3 months. Our products and trainings are current and supported by successful organizations worldwide. Whether you are a leading executive, an HR director, or a team leader, give us a call and let's talk about what we can do to support you. 808-313-1504. Are you a business innovator, or are you just sitting on the sidelines? Tune in every week for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP. Host Bonnie D. Graham talks to a cross-section of the movers and shakers who are leading by example. They will share best practices and innovative ideas to keep you thinking and moving along with the best. Join us for Coffee Break with Game Changers, presented by SAP, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
You are tuned in to Leading with Social Emotional Intelligence, Building Trust Through Intentionality and Vulnerability. To reach Glenn Harris or his guest this week, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or send an email to gharris@pacificleadershipassociates.com. Now, back to Leading with Social Emotional Intelligence.
Welcome back to Leading with Social Emotional Intelligence. This is your host, Glenn Harris, and the focus of today's show is on 360-degree feedback, achieving success through its use, and vulnerability. So if you are someone, again, who wants to increase your peak performance and your market value, then today's show is specifically designed for you. You might ask yourself, what does vulnerability and feedback have to do with leadership success? Has everything to do with leadership success. The more vulnerable you are in an appropriate place, time, and with the appropriate people, the more that people are brought into you, the more you build vulnerability-based trust in your organization, and that is the foundation for building a cohesive team. Whether it's a sales team, whether it's a management team, whether it is a short built-term team to only be there for 12 months in place to do a set of specific goals and accomplishments, vulnerability-based trust as a leader is critical in building an effective team to get a high return on your investment and to accomplish the performance measures or metrics that are set out for your goals. It is a must. So what does 360-degree feedback do for you as a leader? One, it provides you with a safe mechanism to gain an understanding as to how others in your organization perceive you in your performance. It is critical. We only see the world through our own set of eyes. And I do not have the ability to understand how you see me unless I ask. I need to ask and listen. And for some of us, we're still working on those listening skills. So working with a trainer and a coach and who specifically will help you with research-based mechanisms for gaining 360-degree feedback is going to help remove the emotionality from that and is going to help keep you focused on what it can share with you and how you can gain increases in your performance and in your connections with others by utilizing that feedback to build your strengths. It provides you with a mechanism to practice vulnerability, building vulnerability in your organization. It's a very purposeful way for you to demonstrate vulnerability, especially if you're someone that's a huge risk. That's a very high risk to go to. It's a mechanism to practice vulnerability because if you're seeking feedback and you're modeling that, others look at that and go, oh, you know what? You care about my opinion. You don't just want me to sit in a meeting and say what you want to hear. You want me to be honest with you. You want me to share it with you. And you're going to take it in and sit with it. And you're going to make use of it. You may not agree with a particular thing that I'm sharing with you, but you are going to look at it and you're going to make use of it. And we're going to have discussions about it. That is powerful. So practicing vulnerability in a very scripted manner can be powerful for you as a team leader, as a leader. It also enables you to build relationships with others by reaching and extending yourself. So now you get a chance to see how your decisions are actually affecting other people around you. So some great, wonderful ways that feedback, 360-degree feedback or feedback in itself and how you go about getting it can help boost that trust level in your organization and can help you achieve peak performance. Now, I told people kind of at the beginning that I'm going to give you some quick tips about that. So in considering 360-degree feedback, and you are welcome to give us a call after the show or the following week and over, that's what we're here for, to assist you to talk more about it in this particular area. However, I want you to know that it's a short, easy way for you to get some feedback in the workplace. You have to do it carefully. This is just a short, on spur of the moment way to do it. And what I do is I call that a little Delphi study. You can take a 3x5 card, very simple. And on the front side, you just put a little plus for now to note in your memory. And that's questions that you're going to ask, three questions you're going to ask people. They're open-ended, but they're short response questions about what you're currently doing adding value to the company. So you might, on the front side of that card, go, what three things am I currently doing that is adding value to our company? Another way of wording that question is, what would you like me to continue doing that is adding value to our company in my professional role? 1, 2, 3. So the person getting the card gets to write three specific things down. Flip the card over on the other side. The next question is, what three things would you like me to do differently to increase the value that I can add to our work in the company? What three things would you like me to do differently to increase the value that I add to individuals within our company? So here it is. And what you do is you have those cards, you give them out to your group that's collective in front of you. You're not going to collect them. They don't sign the cards. They do anything. You give them 5 minutes. You don't want any more than 5 minutes. You don't want them going on. You don't want them emotionally thinking about it. You just want them to put whatever on the top of their head down on those cards. And then you have someone else collect them. And you're going to either, whether you have your secretary do it or you do it because you don't have the names assigned. You just simply write their responses and put them together on a sheet of paper. You can use the computer if you like, coordinate them and use them word for word. Make sure you keep their verbiage there because that's what they said. And you list them. You just list them. And you might have to organize the comments because some of them maybe have common things from different people about similar things. So you're going to put them together and then you're going to shoot that back when you've done in a meeting. You're going to say, thank you. This is what I got from you. And it is their raw, what they shared, no names attached. And that is very helpful. And then you can ask them, what are some of these things in the areas that I can add value to the company by doing differently that you would like to prioritize to see me work on first? And you get their feedback about it. That is a huge investment in building trust. And it isn't something that you have to have an outside firm come in to do 360-degree feedback with. Okay, so I've given you and shared with you an easy tool. You can call me if you're not sure how to do that, what you want to talk. It's no fee, no charge for my time. Feel free to give a call at 808-313-1504. If you don't reach me while I'm not available, then I will return your call. Leave me a time and day that's appropriate to return your call, and I promise you, I will get back to you. Now, next week, Tuesday, December 9th, we have a dynamic show lined up for you. My guest will be Julie Straw. Now, those of you who are not familiar with Julie, she's the Executive Vice President of Workplace Solutions in the Wiley Corporation. Julie is an international speaker. She's an expert on everything DISC and author of The Four-Dimensional Manager, Strategies for Managing Different People in Different Ways. And if you haven't read her book, boy, I encourage you to pick it up. It's a good read. And it really, I'm going to read you one piece out of that for that. The best way to build understanding in a corporation through DISC it can foster cooperation, acceptance, and trust, the keys to top performance in today's increasingly diverse and team-oriented workplace. So as I promised you at the beginning of our shows in October, that we're going to take you through a series of working with social-emotional intelligence, giving you some skill sets, and we're going to move into communication strategies. We're going to do the next two or three sessions in our show, specific strategies, assessments, and tools with different guests. And then we're going to go into the five behaviors of cohesive teams and how we can add value to your organization and your teams, your colleagues, your subordinates in that. Finally, I'd like to invite you for your feedback about today's show. I want to hear from you. We want to know if what we're sharing with you is of value to you. So I would really appreciate you taking the time to reach out to us. You can email me at gharris, that's G for Glenn, Harris at PacificLeadershipAssociates.com. Again, gharris at PacificLeadershipAssociates.com, or you can call me at 808-313-1504. I will personally get back to you if I'm not available to take the call or the email at the time. I will get back to you within 72 hours, and I will guarantee you that I will give you some of my time to talk with you. I welcome your feedback. We want to know if we're adding value to our listeners out there. Thank you very much. Have a great week. We'll see you next Tuesday, December 9th. With Executive Vice President Julie Straw.
Thank you for being a part of our show. Leading with social-emotional intelligence, building trust through intentionality and vulnerability with host Glenn Harris can be heard live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. We'll talk next time.